This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Shao Ik. Today is our public health series. Joining me, my co-host, Azrul Mohammad Khalib, CEO of the Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy. Over there on Zoom, how are you, Azrul?
Very well, thank you, Shao Ik. I must say, it's very, very hot and the roads are continuously jammed. It's a public health issue.
It is, actually. It's mental health, it's emotional health, it's physical health. It is. Traffic especially has been a huge burden for people. I don't know what's going on. But let's be a bit serious. Our public health issue we're discussing today is unintended pregnancy, something that I think for you, Azrul, and for our guests as well, in the areas that you've been working in over so many years, it's something that you keep coming back to over and over again in terms of the problem, trying to look at its root causes and trying to look at solutions, long-term solutions that we can put in without the moral outrage. So, you know, I'm going on this today without the moral outrage, because I think we get shocked when we hear the statistics being reported every now and again. The statistics, I think last estimate was something like 18,000 teenage pregnancies in Malaysia that are reported every year. This is among girls under 18. Or, of course, when we hear these tragic reports of another newborn baby being abandoned. And, you know, the outrage that comes with it, the chatter that goes around it. But at the end of the day, we do have to address, why do girls and women find themselves facing unintended pregnancies in the first place? We need to talk about what kind of resources we need to invest in the public health aspects of these, including through family planning care, increasing contraceptive use, and you know, we look at the issues related to legal abortions as well. Are women accessing them? So joining us to discuss these, Professor Dr. Jamia Hassan, consultant OBGYN and fetal maternal medicine from UITM Hospital, to discuss you know, what we need to improve. And I'm sure, again, Prof, this is something you've been talking about for many years.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, how are you today, Prof?
I'm good. Thank you very much for inviting. Happy to be here.
Yeah, so you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Call us at 03-773-2900 if you have questions or thoughts you'd like to share. Azrul, I just want to kick this off by getting some thoughts from you. You recently organised a conference. Galen Centre organised a conference on this very issue. What were some outcomes that you'd like to share?
Well, Shao, thanks for mentioning that. I mean, we organized recently a conference on tackling unintended pregnancies in Malaysia, and we came away with many, many different findings, really, but five really stood up. And first one I want to share is the fact that unintended pregnancies affects everyone. And we're looking at not only married and unmarried women, women from disadvantaged backgrounds and even privileged backgrounds, but also men and boys. And it has an impact in terms of how a person is able to be developed, but also in terms of the community as a whole. So the second one is that new technologies and methods of contraception are of little use if we do not recognize the need and urgency for contraceptives to be readily available and accessible for those who need it. The third, cost should not be a barrier to contraceptive access and family planning. And what we need to be able to do is not inhibit women of any reproductive age from being able to access the contraception of her choice. The fourth, when women have autonomy over the number and timing of their children, they're more likely to attain higher education and participate more fully in the formal labor market, as well as have better health outcomes. And finally, the fifth and final one, which could arguably be one of the most important ones that we need to be able to carry out from that conference, is that family planning and reproductive health are essential investments and part of a strong, robust and resilient health system. So we can't shortchange that critical area of our health system. So we came away with these five outputs from the conference, and we're looking at continuing the conversation further, hopefully not yet again for another two decades or more, still where we are over the past.
Yeah, I'm wondering, you know, in our lifetimes, what kinds of progress we will see. We'll get Prof. Jamia's thoughts on that. But, you know, in that overview alone, Azrul, you've it looks like your conference was really robust in terms of the discussions, the content that came out of it. We hope to just tap into that a little bit in our shorter one-hour conversation today. But Prof, you know, the reason I brought up moral outrage that comes with these kinds of issues is that when girls and women find themselves facing unintended pregnancies, the labels on them are, you know, promiscuity, loose morals. Should we be looking at it from a public health perspective instead? And what is that view?
Thank you very much for that question. I think from the public perspective, unintended pregnancy poses a very great challenges in the public health in terms of the financial constraint, the social impact, long-term and short-term. So it's very important. But I think we also need to understand from different perspectives. Unintended pregnancy, by definition, is a mistimed, unwanted, or unplanned pregnancy. It can occur in single women, but it can also in married women. And like what Azrul said just now, we've got to give women autonomy. But I think when it comes about pregnancy, yes, women should be given autonomy to decide about their reproductive health, but it also involves the support from the men. They cannot do it alone. Of course, they have an autonomy to sort of decide for themselves, but they need to be given some support. So I want to pick up at what just now, as you were saying, that, you know, 18,000 teenage
pregnancy
has been reported. But we need to look at that a little bit more detail. So when we look at 18,000, does that mean they're all out of a single woman, or are they within marriage? Because, you know, the age of marriage in Malaysia at 16 years old, for, you know, so it can still be teenage pregnancy, but within marriage, because there are some differences in terms of whether they are single or whether they are married. Because we did a small study in 2006 to 2008. My team, Prof. Sophia and us, collected the unintended pregnancy, teenage pregnancy in UMMC from the year 2006 to 2008. And at the time, there were more than 15,000 live birth deliveries in 2 years. And the teenage pregnancy is about 177. But from that point, so you see, it's about 1.1%. Mm. And if you look at that particular data, it has been published. 4% of that 177 were girls under the age of 15, and 35% were within the age of 15 to 18, and 62% were between the age of 18 to 19. But the thing is, 35% of them are single, so that means 62%, more than 65% are married. But the important thing from that study was we look at the implications of that. So when you have single teenage pregnancy, they tend to have more consequences. So in that study, we find that almost 27% has never come to the hospital sector for a checkup. And when they appeared in the hospital, 62% either they've never been to the hospital or they have inadequate checkups. Therefore, this will impose health problems in these young girls. So that's the thing. So I know that it's something that we'll be talking about for the next 20 years, but we need to see how we can make it better. So everybody needs to play a role.
Mm. When you say that such a large proportion of the girls have never been for an antenatal checkup or it was inadequate, what's the reasons for that?
Well, most of the reason because they are single. So they are afraid to go and see. And most of the time, they will have no support from the family members. So they will be scared to go and approach the health sector. And, you know, like what you said just now, a stigma. Mm. So if they come out in the open, so they will be stigmatized. And this will impose a lot of problems on them, on, you know, shaming, blaming. So this is what will prevent them from coming. So we need to have a support for this group because, yeah, we'll talk about moral issues, but we also need to talk about health issues here because we have to see why they had this unintended pregnancy. It's interesting, Azrul, when you talk about this unintended pregnancy. And what I think the question we need to ask is, when women doesn't want to get pregnant, yet they do not make that there is a mismatch in decision. They do not prevent themselves from getting pregnant. So by having effective contraception. But we also need to look at the provision of the contraception, whether it's equally accessed to everyone. So especially when you're talking about teenage, they may not have adequate access. So because they're not be friendly services. And so those are the things that we need to think about.
And that it goes to a very important point here, because we say that it affects pretty much everyone in society. But what makes a difference, and this is where it really is jarring, is what can people do to prevent unintended pregnancies and what you can do after you discover that you have an unintended pregnancy. And that is what makes a difference between the different individuals involved, not only in terms of their marital status, but also in terms of age categories and socioeconomic background. So it is a huge challenge that really today our conversation tends to be very much limited to those who are much younger. But the conversation is actually wider in scope and much more complex. It's not that easy a way to move forward when it comes to these sort of issues.
So I think for married women, it's a different kind of stigma and burden, right? Because I think setting aside the obvious challenges that younger single girls would go through in terms of accessing contraceptives, as well as what happens if they face an unintended pregnancy. Then on the other hand, married women face the perception that your role as a married woman, as a wife, is to be a reproductive vessel, so to speak. Have you seen those attitudes changing at all, Prof. Chamir?
Well, you know, yes, women's, they're supposed to give birth because men cannot give birth. But we also know that now in this age and days, women also are very important workforce. They also need to do their own stuff. So apart from bringing out their family, apart from giving birth. So that's the reason why women must be healthy before they embark into pregnancy. Because pregnancy is not a disease, but yet women can die during pregnancy or during pregnancy complications. So if you look at WHO in 2005, they estimated out of 210 million births, about 87 million are unplanned or missed time or unwanted. But 41 million of the 87 million ended up in live birth. So what it means is, so as we just now were saying, that married women can also fall in this problem, unintended missed time and unplanned pregnancy. What they do to them? Well, married women will be working, an important workforce. So if they are pregnant, there will be some problem into the workforce. They would have to take leave. They are during delivery. They would have to take time off their job to take care of the little one during a postnatal. And also financially, maybe they're not ready for that another child in the family. So missed time, unwanted, unplanned doesn't mean that they will end up in either losing the pregnancy. Okay, when somebody has unplanned or missed time pregnancy, they got three options. One is they can, sometimes it results in abortion, or it results in spontaneous miscarriage, or even though unplanned, unwanted, untimed, but a lot of those women end up with live birth. So this will impose pressure on the family structure in terms of provision financially to the newborn.
I think mentally, psychologically, that's something that perhaps gets pushed to the back of the discussion a little bit. You know, your perspective of having seen so many women, I'm sure.
You see, women multitask, whether or not we like it, we'll multitask. So we manage the family, we take care of the husband, Azrul. I'm sure you will agree with me. We have to take care of the family. If the woman is not sane, no, they cannot. They cannot take care of the family, so they need to be healthy, psychologically, emotionally adequate to do all that. So when they have, so let's say when they have unplanned pregnancy, of course, at the end of the day, if you look at some studies recently that was published in 2018 from UPM, it says that even though they are unplanned, suddenly they will change their mind and it become the wanted pregnancy. Initially missed time, unplanned, then later become a wanted pregnancy. But they still need to think about how to provide for this little one, because it's important for them to provide for the little one, because psychologically and long-term impact, there is an impact to the newborn if they don't provide for it. So I guess there's a lot of stressor
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's a lot of stressor, work stressor, family stressor. So woman needs to know how to manage the stress, because we know that stress is one of the main cause of hypertension.
Oh, gosh, and many other issues.
Yeah, I'm sure. So women need to relax more, I guess. So more high teas.
We need a lot more than that. But let's continue this conversation when we come back from the break. My co-host, Azrul Mohamad Khalib, CEO of the Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy, joining me on our public health series. And we're speaking to Professor Dr. Jamia Hassan, consultant OBGYN and fetal maternal medicine from UITM Hospital. We are discussing preventing unintended pregnancy, trying to get a better understanding of it from a public health perspective. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik, and my co-host, Azrul Mohamad Khalib, CEO of the Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy. For our public health series today, we're speaking to Professor Dr. Jamia Hassan, consultant OBGYN and fetal maternal medicine at UITM Hospital. We're addressing unintended pregnancies. What do we need to do to prevent them and provide more support to girls and women when they are facing an unintended pregnancy, which could be a pregnancy that's mistimed, unplanned, or unwanted. And we're looking at not just young teenage girls, most likely single. We're also looking at women really across the life stages, across the reproductive life stages. They could be single or they could be married as well. And we were earlier talking about women should have the autonomy to choose when she has a pregnancy, when she bears that baby, because there are so many effects on her mentally as well as physically. Azrul.
Well, shall we, Professor, we have to admit that if men could become pregnant and could give birth, I doubt we'll be having many of these conversations.
Would you do it?
I can't say I would. I mean, seriously, what women go through that whole process is nothing short of breathtaking and courageous and brave. And this is something that if men could actually function that way, we wouldn't have the problems concerning contraception. Contraceptives would be available everywhere. There would be safe abortion without any hurdles. There'll be reproductive health, sexual reproductive health education everywhere in school, because essentially it would be something that men would care about. But here's the thing, when we look back at these issues, it really places these issues into a box where women are expected to be the sole burden of responsibility to shoulder on. And I think that's something we need to deconstruct. But let me go back, Prof, to a fundamental question here. And I think perhaps you could explain to many of us, is there such a thing really about there being an unwanted pregnancy? I mean, surely all pregnancies should be wanted, right?
Yes, of course. But there is, because as I said just now, sometimes there is a mismatch in decision. So as what you said correctly, women needs to have their own autonomy to time their own pregnancy so they are safe in embarking into pregnancy. Yet, the question we should ask is, why aren't they taking precautions in terms of effective contraception to prevent that pregnancy? So that's the issue, because there is a mismatch. They didn't want the pregnancy, yet they're not taking the right decision. So why? So there are many reasons. If you look at publication, there are many reasons. One of the main reasons women will say is this misinformation. They are so worried about side effects, fear of getting cancer with contraception, and this myth of like having sexual intercourse very close to my menstrual period, I will not get pregnant. And sometimes women has the idea that one-off sexual intercourse will not get me pregnant. Mm. And also because, sometimes they're not aware of certain benefits of contraception, or they use the contraception ineffectively. The contraception, if used effectively, the efficacy is good. But if women take the pills every now and then, they forget. Or they use condom, but they don't use it properly. Condom is a good contraceptive option, but it is something that needs to be planned. and need to be applied correctly. So if you take the pill, you need to take it every day. So if you cannot do that, then you need to think about long-term contraception. So these are the things that we need to think about. So why is that so?
Are there conditions in which being pregnant for a woman could be harmful to her own health as well?
There are, of course. You know, some women who have comorbid, that means before they embark into pregnancy, maybe they have congenital heart disease, which if they get pregnant, like Eisenmenger syndrome, they get pregnant, the chances they die during pregnancy is much higher. So in this group of women, they cannot get pregnant and they need to use effective contraception to prevent them from getting pregnancy. So we need to discuss with them. Sometimes they think that, well, I want to try for pregnancy, even though you tell me that I might die during pregnancy. So these are the things that we need to talk to women. And sometimes it becomes very difficult, especially when it involves the partners, the husband, the wife. When we say something, they cannot get pregnant. You cannot have a child. It's something sometimes some people cannot accept. But there are situations where women cannot go through pregnancy at all. And they have to, in Islam, pregnancy is, we cannot stop procreation, but we can plan pregnancy. But there are situations where when the woman gets pregnant, the chances of dying is very high. In that case, then we shouldn't put the lady into pregnancy.
So the woman, the mother's life, the woman's life is of utmost importance
first.
Of
course.
Yeah. Coming back to contraceptive use, and you were talking about the misinformation around it and the lack of awareness and understanding. Do we know, what do we know about attitudes towards the use of contraceptives in Malaysia in terms of, are there myths and misconceptions about certain types of contraceptives being better or, you know, perhaps less useful than others?
If you look at the contraception uptake in Malaysia, effective contraception among our women, if you look at the Family Planning Survey Board or the Ministry of Health reports, effective contraception in Malaysia is about 50%. Effective meaning the use of oral contraceptive pills. There's so many kind of oral contraceptive pills. Long-term contraceptions like implant or intrauterine devices or intrauterine system or even injection depot. These are long-term and they're highly efficacious. So the uptake of these effective contraceptions is about 50%. And that means about 50% of our women don't take contraception. Mm. So why is that so? Could it be because their partner don't allow them to use contraception? But if you look at the survey, it's not true. The partners, even in the Islam, even the men, Muslim men, they support using contraception. So it's not true. But there are other reasons. Fear of getting cancers, especially when using oral contraceptive pill. They make an association of breast cancer associated with oral contraceptive pill. But we look at long-term data. Cohort data in UK showed that oral contraceptive pill in terms of users and ever users in terms of breast cancer is the same. But oral contraceptive pill has such an important reduction of cancer to preventing ovarian cancer, endometrial cancer. And that's very powerful apart from having preventing pregnancy. Mm. Now, long-term contraception, if you look at maternal mortality in Malaysia, if you look at the data from 2009-2011, about 40% of women who die during pregnancy doesn't use contraception. And they may be in advanced age and they had multiple births. So they should be using long-term contraception.
So we're talking about it being safe, not only that, life-saving
yes.
as well.
Yeah.
Azrul?
Well, you know, that data you quoted, Prof, is even more astonishing when we consider the fact that it's actually married women, 52.2%. Mm-hmm. And when you look at modern methods, like the pill, condoms and so forth, it's 30%. So it's even lower.
Yes.
So unfortunately, when it comes to unmarried, we have no real idea as to what the percentage is. And it really isn't because there aren't these contraceptives available in the market. We can easily get them. We can go to 7-Eleven, we can go to pharmacies, we can go to hospital and so forth. So there needs to be an answer as to why there are no real improvements from that 2014 data, really. You know, and yet we know that we are seeing the symptoms or the impact of unintended pregnancies, where we see adolescent pregnancies, cases of children born to children. And these are all real life situations mm-hmm. which are seeing itself manifest, even abandoned babies, you know, we are seeing as a consequence of unintended pregnancies, and we should be able to do better, shouldn't we, Prof?
When you talk to women, you know, why they don't use contraception, a lot of them will come up and say they didn't think that they'll get pregnant. You know, those are the common answers you get. They don't think they get pregnant. And even among adolescents, there is a misperception that one night stand or one sexual intercourse after the period or during the safe period, they won't get pregnant. And they have, if they had done it once and they didn't get pregnant, they think it's a foolproof method. It is an incorrect perception, so it's not correct. So I guess there's a lot of misinformation and misperception out there. So that's the reason why the uptake was still about 50%. But having said that, Singapore is not much better. So we're almost the same, and they're more affluent than us. So yet the uptake of contraception, effective contraception, is still not ideal. It's still not up to 70%.
So many people still prefer the withdrawal method, I suppose.
Withdrawal method is one of the something that we shouldn't sort of because of the ineffective method. Even condoms, a condom is one of the effective contraceptive options to prevent against infection like HIV, HPV, and also pregnancy. But the problem is it's a plan. So you need to have the condom before you have any sexual intercourse. It had to be applied before any contact and consistently every time. So if you do that every time, then the chances of getting unintended pregnancy will be much lower. But still, you know, life is sometimes can be so unpredictable. So that's where we get caught in this unpredictability of life.
But is it also because they feel like they can't go to a 7-Eleven to buy a condom? And will they be denied, especially if they're younger? Will they be judged?
Being judged is something people are always worried about. But I think in 7-Eleven, the condom are sold at the counter and nobody's going to ask you for your IC to buy a condom. Now, even if you go in the oral contraceptive pill, it's under Class C, meaning you do not need a prescription from the doctors to get it from the pharmacies, but it has to be dispensed by the pharmacies, not off the counter. So they can get it from the pharmacy, and the pharmacy would give the appropriate counselling. But a lot of young people, or even married and single, and they have irregular sexual encounters, they prefer to use the emergency contraception. Now, emergency contraception shouldn't be used as a regular contraception. It's emergency. But of course, it's again another option of contraception.
Mm. Oh, I do hope, though, that our colleagues from the Ministry of Health are listening in, because even though from their policy, there is no differentiation or discrimination between married or unmarried women coming forward to their clinics, like the women's clinic, Clinic Ibu da Anak, for example, you know, wanting to get contraceptives. We know from anecdotal information that, especially if you're a Malay Muslim, a single woman, you could be denied contraceptives because you're, you know, Muslim. And yet these are where a lot of people depend on their reproductive health services. So we need to make sure that contraceptives are available regardless whether or not you're married or unmarried, especially if they're coming from the public health services. So this is something that is still a barrier, especially for those who are disadvantaged individuals who are coming in accessing that clinic being the only point of healthcare that they have. So it's one issue that we have right now in terms of affordability of contraceptives as well. That condom from 7-Eleven may cost up to like 4 to 7 ringgit now. In fact, the price went up recently. I've seen. So it could be an affordability issue as well.
I mean, oral contraceptives are not cheap either.
Well, yeah, they're not cheap. But when you think about upfront costs, let's say one packet of oral contraceptive pill may cost somewhere between 40 to 60 ringgit. Mm. but that's for 1 month.
Yes, correct.
So you think about Starbucks. If you drink Starbucks for, four Starbucks in a month, it's going to cost you almost the same. So it's an upfront cost. People always think about upfront cost. Same thing if you long-acting contraception, for example, implant. It costs anywhere between, in the government sector, it can cost in your ITM anywhere between 350 in our side, but in private, maybe up to 600. It's an upfront cost, but it's for 3 years. So when you talked about day-to-day cost, it's very cheap. So it's just an upfront cost. But I want to pick up what Azul was saying, though. I think nowadays, we in this modern 21st century, we are moving toward discriminating people against the provision of contraception or reproductive access, even in the government sector. I know previously there was some concern about, maybe it's anecdotal, maybe some places there's some concern. But I think if, as long as they are in the age of consent, and the age of consent is above 18, they shouldn't be denied of the services. And exactly. I know a lot of my friends in the Ministry of Health, they are providing these services. The only problem is when they are below the age of consent. Then, as medical practitioner, we also have to practice within the law of the country. So we have to observe that. But at the same time, we also wear a physician hat. So we're not going to wear our own personal hat, I think. So we should always think that way. So if the patient in front of me is a Muslim, a non-married, and requests counselling, now I'm wearing a physician hat and that patient is my patient. It's my duty to provide her with that safe discussion. And I shouldn't deny that patient that. I'm not wearing a different hat or my personal own hat. I think if you do that for every patient, we should be okay.
And if we go exactly. a few steps backwards and talk about sexual health education, when you brought up the misconceptions that women, and I'm sure men and boys, have about only one sexual intercourse will be safe, withdrawal will be safe, right? Doesn't that bring us back to this decades-long debate about sexual health education as well?
I agree with you, but if you look at back in terms of our health education, the comprehensive reproductive health curriculum in school has been there. It has been there all this while. But probably the implementation needs to be strengthened because the teachers are the ones that are implementing the sexual reproductive health curriculum in school. And probably they are not the best person to do it, but they are the only person in school to do it, so they have to be trained. So when we talk about reproductive sexual comprehensive sexual reproductive education in school, we also must talk about responsibility. We also must talk about the consequences of if you decided to partake into that sexual activity, what will happen. Exactly. And this is not talked about.
Now it's a very biological perspective.
Yes, it's more of anatomy.
This
and
goes
all,
there that, and yes. that happens.
Yeah, but the thing is, so probably the teachers are not to be faulted because they're not trained. So maybe they give it, but maybe to a very basic level. So now let's talk, whose responsibility is it? My own take, this is my personal view, it should be the responsibility of all the teachers teaching school, but the responsibility starts at home. With the parents. So the parents should be educating the children also in terms of their sexual reproductive health. Graduation according to age. And I say the simplest thing is, for example, you see the five-year-old, they would know that the male and female genitalia are different. And they would tell you that. But sometimes instead of us explaining to them, we just shut them out. We don't talk to them. You said, no, you cannot talk about that. So in one way, we have to reflect on ourselves. We are not comfortable in talking openly about sexual reproductive health with our children or even for that matter with our husband. So if we are not comfortable, so our young kids will find ways to find it from other avenues, like, for example, the internet, friends, but they're unguided. So it's better to keep by the parents. So parents have equal responsibility as the teachers. And when they go to college, The university, colleges, they also have equal responsibility to ensure that this being carried on. And the other social providers and also the country, of course, the policymakers. So everybody has to play a role, including Azrul. You know, he's Galen. He's playing a lot of role. Yeah. So we still have to keep on talking about it, creating awareness. But I think one thing that we need to break is are we confident enough to talk about it openly to our children?
You're absolutely right. Because if we can't even do that in the safe space of the family and the home, how can we change policies, laws? How can we go out there and talk to virtual strangers about this?
Agree.
I absolutely agree with you. And it will be intergenerational as well. But let's continue this when we come back from our next break. My co-host Azrul Muhammad Khalib from the Galen Center for Health and Social Policy, co-hosting our public health show with me today. We're speaking to Professor Dr. Jamia Hassan, consultant OBGYN and fetal maternal medicine specialist at UITM Hospital. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoik, and my co-host for the Public Health Series, Azrul Muhammad Khalib, CEO from the Galen Center for Health and Social Policy. We're speaking to Professor Dr. Jamia Hassan, consultant OBGYN and fetal maternal medicine specialist at UITM Hospital. We're discussing unintended pregnancies today. We've talked a lot about the mismatch in terms of knowledge and practice when it comes to accessing contraceptives, knowledge about what contraceptives can do, a lot of misinformation and lack of education about reproductive health as well as responsibility when it comes to relationships and sexual intercourse. Just very quickly, Prof, you know, and we talked about abandoned babies being one of the most tragic outcomes of an unintended pregnancy, but there's a lot happening in secrecy as well. So really, currently, what do girls and women do when they face an unintended pregnancy?
So that's a difficult question to ask. I hope that when they have this unintended pregnancy, they go to their family for support. But it doesn't happen that way because they are scared. And when they are in this position, so the only simplest thing for them to do is to do something that's not wise, something that's unthinkable of them. But I think their decision, for example, abandon the baby or just leave the baby somewhere. But we got also to think what these girls undergo or go through when they get pregnant and when they are so much alone and there are so much stress. So sometimes they will do, the decision will be unrational. So we hope that now we do have places where they can go for support. You know, they got a lot of support services. But the problem is they still will not come out in the open because fearing the blame culture, fearing the stigma, what they will go through. So they will just go and you know, go through it alone.
Mm-hmm.
And this will have a lot of impact in their mental health issues, their psychological and emotional issues. Then after delivery, let alone about the problem during the pregnancy, lack of prenatal care, poor nutrition, anemia, and so on. But once the baby are born, when this baby are born due to poor nutrition of the mom, the long-term consequences of that little one, because we know that environment during intrauterine has some impact in the development of non-communicable diseases 20 to 30 years down the line. Coronary artery disease, obesity, diabetes type 2, hypertension, and so on, results from the unhealthy or not maybe poor nutrition environment in pregnancy.
Mm.
But also because of this, these girls who get who are pregnant, maybe in school, so probably they are forced to drop out of school. Mm. So this also can be a problem in the financial. If they decide to carry on the pregnancy, if they have no other options, they decide to carry on, then providing for the child with no financial stability can be a problem. So this is not going to be easy.
And if we haven't even addressed the vulnerable situation that led to the unintended pregnancy in the first place, who's to say it won't repeat again and again for the girl? This brings me to the difficult question about abortion.
Mm-hmm.
If in the scenario of a single woman or a teenage girl getting an unintended pregnancy, do they have access to abortions legally?
Abortion in Malaysia is provided legally, but it's under the Penal Code, subsection 312. It says an exception 312. The abortion, if it is performed by a registered medical practitioner within the criteria of that abortion, if the carrying on the pregnancy will harm the physical health and mental health that woman more than if she get pregnant, then abortion can be considered. So it's something that it's provided for, but it has to be practiced within the law. So that means it has to be provided by the medical practitioner registered, counselling, very careful counselling, concern and so on, and it can be performed. Even in the Ministry of Health had provided determination of pregnancy guideline in 2012, and which has recently been updated in 2018, and that's what they pledged 5 years after that. So it's provided for. But when we talk about this young girl, so we also got to think about the age, because age of consent in Malaysia is 18 years old. But if it's under 16 years old, then we are again governed by the Child Protection Act. So which says that if they have sexual intercourse outside, let's say marriage, that becomes a statutory rape. So for the doctors, we are liable to report. So if we don't, then we can get into trouble. So, but of course, we still provide care. So, and we need to bring in the parents. So this is where the problem is, because age of consent is 18, age of marriage is 16. But if they have, if they are found to be pregnant under 16 years old, then what can we do about it? So even though the law provides the provision of termination of pregnancy under the abortion law and under Penal Code 312, but we have to see whether or not is within the legal premise, how are we going to go about it? So, and to make it a little bit more complex, if it is a Muslim, then we also have to relate to fatwa, which is a little bit more rigid. So those are the things that we need to think about. But it's not on the clinical ground. It's not impossible to do. We have seen situations where we would perform under condition which is provided for within the premise of the legal framework. And as a medical practitioner in the country, I think we have to practice within the legal framework, even though we always uphold the patient's interest at our heart. But at the end of the day, we still have to look at the legal framework.
I'm glad that you emphasized that repeatedly, Professor, because there is a misconception that abortion is illegal in Malaysia. And a lot of healthcare practitioners, especially, are reluctant to provide such services, even for those who are very much in need of it due to their circumstances and which endanger their lives as well as their well-being. It's something that we need to be able to create awareness more of, so that more and more people should be able to have access to safe abortion services. Because right now, there is a very large need for these services, because if we look at the number of babies abandoned each month, it's 9 babies per month that are being abandoned, and it's a result of unintended pregnancies. And there could be circumstances in which these pregnancies occur, whether it's due to incest, sexual abuse, rape and so forth. And women and girls in these circumstances should be able to be protected, seek protection from the legal framework, needs to be able to get the kind of essential services in order for them to be taken care of. And, you know, unfortunately, we tend to care very much about what happens in the uterus and the womb, but don't care very much about what happens once the baby that's born out, unintended pregnancies, is born, you know. And as a result, there is huge neglect, there's abuse of the child and so forth. So, you know, we are hoping that there be more safe abortion services available, because we are looking at a crisis in terms of unintended pregnancies in this country.
Do we know any statistics about women and girls accessing unsafe abortions?
Well, I don't have data on that. I don't think you can find data in a country about unsafe abortion. But if I have to reflect on the confidential inquiry into maternal death, which I've been privileged to be part of for the last more than 25 years. So if you look at the mother that dying from abortions in 2009, it was just about 4%. And by the time 2011, it's come down to about 1.5%. So we don't see very much unsafe abortions in our country. But But having said that, we also don't have data on abortions.
You may not know about those.
So that's the problem. So we do not know. But that's the reason why I think from the Confidential Inquiry into Maternal Death Committee, we recommended that the termination of pregnancy guideline be provided for.
Mm.
And that was from our recommendation from the CMD committee. And in 2012, the Ministry of Health agreed and it was provided for under the Ministry of Health, and it's available throughout the country.
Mm.
So that is something coming out of it. So, but along the years, we have seen much lower cause of death from abortion because at one point, all maternal death must be reported. It's compulsory to be reported. So we would know if they die from abortions. So those are small. But maybe if it's an infection, if they are being terminated illegally by unsafe people, the resulting infection, that one we wouldn't know.
Mm.
Yeah. Because we don't have any data on that.
Yeah. So that's where just because there's no data, this may not mean it's not happening as well, which is a frightening thought. You know, we have to wrap up. It's been a rich discussion. Of course, a lot more to continue when it comes to these conversations. But if I could get a takeaway message from you, Prof.
I think women must, like what researchers know, must have their autonomy on their own reproductive rights. For them to be able to time the pregnancy to be wanted timely, then they have to look at effective contraception. Mm. Whether or not they are within a marriage framework or unmarried framework, if they want to avoid unintended pregnancy, that's what they have to do. An effective contraception, and they have to take care of themselves for them to be able to go through pregnancy safely, physically, mentally, and emotionally.
Azrul?
We definitely need to make many of these decisions based on evidence-driven, data-guided principles in order for us to be able to ensure that we're able to take care and have the best interests of the women and girls at heart. You know, we need to be able to ensure that that happens, because today a lot of these decisions are made on non-science relation, and this goes to cultural, religion, and sometimes even just feeling in terms of how these decisions are being made. And men and boys need to be sensitized, and they need to be made aware of these issues as well, because their responsibility is also part of the problem here in them not having the kind of role that they should take. So we need them to also get involved in preventing unintended pregnancies.
You know, I take your point, Prof. It starts at home. It starts with family. It starts with the parents. It starts with parents being able, or the couple being able to talk to each other as well, right? And what more to talk to your children about sexual relationships, about consent, about responsibilities. This has been our public health series. We've been discussing unintended pregnancies. My co-host, Azrul Mohamed Khalib, CEO of the Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy, and Professor Dr. Jamia Hassan, consultant OBGYN and fetal maternal medicine specialist from UiTM Hospital. This has been Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.